The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Mike Pullen. Mike is Director of Strategic Operations at CGI Federal. Mike, first of all, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Roger. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on the show. Today, I think we're going to have a wide-ranging conversation, and I guess I'll set it up by talking a little bit about, you know, we are, as we all know, in the midst of a new administration, about 8 months in. At the working level and at operational level, there's been a lot of guidance issued. There's memo, OMB put out a memo in April about reorganization, and it struck a lot of interesting themes, like shared services, like what are core functions, identifying those at agencies, and how to be more efficient and effective and reduce layers. There's guidance on executive orders on reducing regulatory burdens. There's a whole host of those. Some real sort of thematic, let's get more efficient, more effective across the board. And so when you think about that, Mike, you know, what are you guys thinking about out there in the marketplace as you're trying to support the government customer? Where do you think things are going?
Well, I certainly think as they start to tackle this idea of reorganization, there's some key areas that they're going to really need to focus in on and drive deeper into and kind of do a little bit of a deep dive of really how to get those efficiencies that they're looking for. And I think the four major areas that they're probably going to need to dig into, and we can talk about them a little bit in more in depth. But I think certainly shared services is going to be at the forefront of that list, and agencies focus there. I think digital transformation, they may use different terms, but it is we can
IT
talk about
modernization,
them.
All those things.
All
right?
Kinds of things. Yeah. But how do we take and get more efficiency out of the way we both approach the processes which we do our job and the technology we use in alignment with that. And then I think also contracting. I mean, we've had a lot of talk over a long period of time, as you're well aware of, about streamlining the contracting process, about managing the contracts that we have. And we've seen also the proliferation of IDIQ contracts and ways to, so they're going to have to put some focus there. And I think that's another prime focus area for them. And then there's no way that we can move forward really without tackling this issue to some degree of standardization. If all of these topics of shared services, digital transformation, streamlining contracting is going to have some element of standardization that comes along with this to make this practical in a way that we can move forward.
Okay, Mike, those are some weighty topics for four specific areas that the government is focusing on and will continue to focus on. And so let's tackle each one of those for the rest of the show, okay? How's that sound?
Sounds like a good idea.
Sounds like a great idea. So first of all, let's just start with shared services. Now, I know, was it about 2 weeks ago now, there was an event that you participated in, ACT-IACT, tell us about it. It was a shared services event.
Yeah, actually, earlier this week, ACT-IAC, AGA, put on a shared services summit, bringing government and industry together to some degree. There was heavy participation across agencies in that summit, looking at shared services and how they can really do it. So all kinds of topics were covered in that summit, which was pretty exciting relative to how agencies can get more efficient. There was, of course, the traditional talk of the back office shared services, which is everybody is familiar with.
Like HR.
HR, right? Financial management, yeah. IT, help desk, those
people,
types of services.
To your point, when people think about shared services, that's what they gravitate to. So.
Well, absolutely. Because those are really the ones that are first and foremost in their mind. And most agencies, financial management is not their mission, or human resources is not their mission. So it makes sense to pull shared service around those back office activities and so that they can focus on their mission, which is truly what the agencies need to be doing. And this is also what the reorganization is asking agencies to do, is get greater focus on your mission and not so much focus on the other things things that you have to do just to operate. And so shared services is a great way. And many of those financial management, human resources, IT services are low-hanging fruit to that. But I think that in going into the future, there's ways for these agencies to look at more ways to take advantage of shared services that would help them accomplish their mission. So, for example, many organizations are in the grants management business. There's really, you can get economies of scale and ability to share the services of grants management. And that's just one small, almost every agency has other logistical activities or transportation needs or travel needs. And there's no reason those can't be pooled together into a shared service. But I think we need to take it up to a higher level and get out of the agencies a little bit and get into thinking federal-wide, enterprise-wide views of how many of these things get accomplished. Now, that's certainly not an easy thing to accomplish because agencies are first and foremost, want to be in control of how they operate and execute their mission. They want to be in control of how things occur in there. And they have nuances to the way they want to report out, the way they report to Congress, perhaps, to the way they report to the OIG, to a lot of other folks who have oversight. And these agencies have specific things they want to report out. So they all have this sense of uniqueness to them.
Right. Or someone could say it's very parochial, right?
Very parochial, right. Sure. And we've been doing business for a long time in government, and we're very used to the way that we've been doing it with the processes we've been approaching our mission with and every other element.
So how do you think folks, when you start thinking about government-wide, you know, trying to get, is part of that, I mean, I'm going to flip around because we're going to talk more about standardizing, but that government-wide piece for shared services, must be, when I think about what you described, I'm thinking about standardization as a piece of that, right? Getting everybody on the same page. And to the extent you can, there's always, I think you make a great point, there's always some uniqueness to different agencies, but balancing that uniqueness with areas where that standardization might facilitate greater shared services. Does that make sense to you? Or
well, absolutely. I mean, I think first we've got to take some high level views of what's going on. I think we need to start. We always focus real quickly on the differences, how we're different in our agencies and our missions are different and the way we're trying to execute is different. But I think we should focus on the synergies, the things that we do that are truly the same. And which of those things are common and how can we get both cost savings? Can we get reductions in manpower from doing some of those activities that could help us focus greater on our mission? You know, I think that's a huge fear factor, is a reduction in manpower due to the implementation of a shared service. But as we've seen in most shared services, that doesn't really happen. It's really a redeployment of those resources to get better utilization out of them towards a mission-oriented goal instead of a reporting or back-office-oriented goal.
So how does the commercial operational imperative play into this?
Well, so if you were on the commercial side of this, becoming a shared service and condensing and consolidating and saving money is a business imperative.
Right.
You got to do that to remain competitive. And it's no
return,
it's not
on your investment.
You got to get the return on the investment. And those organizations out in the commercial market are really transforming the marketplace are those who recognize that imperative to their business. That brings a competitive advantage to those organizations. When we look at people like Uber, which is a very common example as a shared service, who brought a digital transformation, a whole new way for people to get transportation in the commercial marketplace, that gave them the competitive edge to be the strong provider for transportation services that they are today. We need to do those same types of things to execute our mission, totally rethink the way we do business, totally rethink the way our technology supports that business. And that's really what I put the term of digital transformation in. We've gone to process automation in most cases, where we take the same old by hand processes and we automate those processes. But instead of process automation, what we really should be thinking is digital transformation. How can we take our technology services and transform the way we do business. Stop thinking of the way we've always done it and trying to automate the process of the way we had done it manually, and think of how can we go into serving our mission with a technology now that enables that and totally transforms the way we have done business in the past.
Right. So rather than trying to make the current processes sort of faster, it's like, how can you rethink the processes and utilize leverage technology to do something in a certain sense, you know, a leap forward or like an S-curve to a whole different transformation of it?
Absolutely. You know, I was talking with a colleague who works at the clearing, Tim Run, who happened to be standing out at a recent meeting on the curb waiting for his Uber to show up, where a federal person was waiting for their government transportation to show up. And he quickly made the comment that instead that the government should have Goober, a government Uber, to provide those transportation services to make it more efficient to get those rides. Now, I kind of like that terminology, so I've said that a few times, but it really does start to stimulate that thinking of new ways that the government can do business. Looking at some commercial practices, yes, I don't think we could ever truly commercialize the federal marketplace, but there are some opportunities to take advantage of transform the way we do business.
Right. Well, Mike, we're up on the first break. My guest today is Mike Pullen. He is Director of Strategic Operations at CGI. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation on shared services, digital transformation, you know, the contracting issues, and, of course, standardizing some practices across government, how to leverage all that capability to improve efficiency and effectiveness of government for the American people. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Mike Pullen. Mike is Director of Strategic Operations at CGI. And we're talking about basically the state of play with regard to the government at the operational execution level, talking about the OMB's recent memo directive on government reorganization, where they directed departments and agencies to come up with their reorganization plans. That was back in April. You know, now the agencies have submitted their plan. They submitted draft plans, and now I think by the end of September they had to submit their formal plans, and now they're all at OMB and they're looking at them. And some of the key features that we've been talking about are the shared services approach. There's a lot of focus in that memo about using shared services model, you know, departments and agencies identifying core missions, and where something's not a core mission, you know, look to others to perform it, which, you know, makes a lot of business sense. So, Mike, from that perspective, when you think about it, we went over a lot in the first segment about shared services. You know, what are your, like, top two or three things that when you're looking at a shared services strategy are the key characteristics of success in that area?
Well, I think first and foremost is to, like we were saying before, first focus on those things that are common and the synergies that we can get in a more common service. We focus first on the uniqueness of an agency, which often leads to setting up roadblocks to the implementation of shared service, stovepipes. And if we flip the thinking and start to think first of synergies, and I think we need a collaborative view. I think we need to have an open dialogue and discussion between those shared services providers and those who are looking to get shared services implemented into their organization to really explore the art of the possible. What can we really do? And there is a lot out there that can be done, of course, if we start to flip that conversation. We see shared services, and this is one of the things we actually did at the Shared Services Summit during our breakout sessions, was to take and walk through shared services in our daily lives. And we see so many opportunities for shared services when we stop and focus on them, everything from lawn maintenance to Uber to daycare and other services that we see every day in TurboTax and QuickBooks and all these other things that are out there in the marketplace that we see. If we start to think in those terms of all those things we see in our daily lives, and apply that to how we can then transform that or translate that into a government agency. Open collaboration is going to be key to a lot of that. The discussion needs to come to the forefront, and open, honest dialogue about what we can and can't do.
Right. Along those lines, I have a question. I think, you know, and we're going to move on soon to digital transformation a little bit more. A couple questions, but first, like, you know, the role of metrics. I mean, you know, this is a management sort of reorganization strategy, shared services. You know, there's, you know, you made the point in the previous segment, you know, shared services and efficiencies. You know, businesses think about those all the time because there's a clear measurement that business looks to, right? Are we profitable or not? What's our return on investment? You know, what's the share price? What's the, you know, dividend? All those kind of things. What's the profit? You know, those are measures, clear sort of measures. You know, is metrics going to be a challenge for the government when they try to figure out how to ensure success? Is it reduction in, you know, outlay for, you know, the HR function? What do you think?
Well, certainly metrics are going to be important. Are the metrics going to be the same as they are on the commercial side? Likely not. Government isn't run the same way as commercial businesses in the sense of profit-driven and bottom line, et cetera. But there, I think certainly we'll have to put a lot of thought into what those metrics will be. And I think most of those metrics will be hinged off of mission delivery. And for every agency, that might look a little bit different. But the other factor that is some initial ideas on this metric discussion that, as you're thinking of it, you know, trust, reliability are going to be factors here. And there's got to be some measure for how we can make sure that the services that we rely on are reliable and that I can trust the management and relinquish the control. That's one of the biggest barriers to most of these things is the relinquishing of the control and having the trust in the process to ensure that I'm not going to have a failure. Because if I have a failure in my agency, I'm going to have to go through a lot of scrutiny of what's happening. And the failures can come in a variety of levels. So how do we have service level agreements? How do we have measurable metrics and outcomes to make sure that we're going to get the services in within the time we need it, with the uptime we need, with the response time we need? To make sure that we're actually able to deliver in our missions. So there are a lot of metrics that are going to get to play in here, and we could probably spend multiple shows talking through what those could be.
It's got to be a piece of the puzzle. Like, you got to be able to measure implementation and what it means.
Absolutely.
So a little bit about, you know, let's move on. Let's shared service, and we beat the heck out of that one. But digital transformation, which is a piece of, you know, which will support shared services, and in some ways, some digital transformation will in and of itself be a shared services model. You know, talk a little bit more about that.
Well, I think transformation, there's a key word. I mean, we have, in a lot of cases, we keep hearing IT modernization, we keep hearing other terms, but most of that lends to simply process automations for the antiquated processes that we all already follow. And if we go through a view in the government to just simply automate our current antiquated processes, we're going to have antiquated automations when we're done. We have to look, and this is why this transformation idea is so key here. We have to really transform the way we do business in government and look at our approach and processes together along with our technology. You know, how often have we heard technology is going to make us so much more efficient, and yet we see test after test and evaluation after evaluation that says we're really no more efficient or effective than we were before, because all we did was put a computer process next to our antiquated process and expected a different result.
So a certain sense that, you know, we're talking about business reengineering, right?
Absolutely.
Or, you know, not just digital transformation. They're part and possible. Part and parcel, excuse me. It's the idea that you need to address, you know, your the business processes approaches in conjunction with technology to try to figure out new ways to do things, right?
It's our business processes, it's our people, it's our technology, and it is really digging in and understanding the mission that we're trying to accomplish. So once we really truly understand the mission objectives and work backwards to process re-engineer most of the way we approach business in the federal government, then we can have the supporting technology and supporting capabilities to really move forward. I mean, we've had, if we go back to our Uber example, we had taxi cabs, we had ways to get a ride, but when Uber came out and put that app in your hand, gave you a new way to manage it, gave you the up-to-date statistics and reporting on when a ride was going to arrive, who was going to be driving for you, and you knew everything before that car shows up. That really transformed the way that we get a ride in most of our metropolitan areas. If we, and I hate to keep using the same example because there's more examples out there, but
and I would think most people would say it's much more efficient.
Much more efficient.
And also, do you have that information? So you know, you have a clearer picture of your use of paid transportation. Talk a little bit about, because we're close to the break, but the role of the workforce in, transfer. I mean, it seems to me that's, you have to have a culture, or you've got to, it takes leadership and creating a culture of sort of critical review of how you're doing things to try to make, questioning the way current processes are to try to make improvements moving forward. Is that fair? I'm struggling with the description, but
I think we're.
You have to question what you're doing now.
Yeah, I think, right? I understand where you're going with that. But I mean, you know what? The people are changing faster than we and our processes are. Students graduating out of college today are already expecting mobility. They're already expecting apps that will do that, whatever it happens to be. They're already expecting technology to drive forward. And the truth is the way our federal marketplace is moving, we're going to actually struggle with people to fill those positions in, because they're going to have a technology expectation coming out of school and prepared to move forward with assistance of applications to do the majority of their jobs that just aren't going to be there. Right. So that environment and the people environment already has that expectation. Right. So it's probably not going to be as hard to move in that direction from a people perspective. And I think many of much of the workforce that's coming into the federal government and coming into the marketplace today, straight out of school, has an expectation that these digital technologies are there. We're moving
in a comfort with them, unlike myself.
They're already comfortable with it. I mean, you have your most homes have their fifth grader with an iPad in front of them somewhere.
Right. So, and Mike, we do have to take a break. My guest today is Mike Pullen. He's Director of Strategic Operations at CGI. And when we come back, we'll continue this discussion and we'll transform into a little bit about contracting and multiple award IDIQs, and where are we going on that, and are there too many, are there too few, do we need them kind of conversation. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today my guest is Mike Pullen. He is Director of Strategic Operations at CGI. Hey, Mike, this segment we're going to talk about something we talk about a lot, right, at the Coalition, and I know I've talked to you a lot about multiple award IDIQ contracts, IDIQ contracts in general. Where are we going with those? Are there, how do we streamline acquisition process? And do we have too many IDIQs? Do we have too few? What's the right number? All those things are questions that are out there in the community. And so I'm just going to open it up to you and respond to what I just described.
Well, sure. And we've had this conversation on the show before, and we've been having it out in the marketplace for quite some time. I think without question, there are too many IDIQs in the current federal marketplace that do the same thing. Let's don't get hung up on a number, but there's too many duplicative IDIQs for the
unnecessarily
same purpose.
Unnecessarily
duplicative. And a lot of that does go back to the control issue that we talked about before. But if you look at the marketplace, I think OMB's more recently said that there was somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 IDIQ contracts just for IT services in the federal marketplace. And by any stretch, 3,000 IT IDIQ contracts in the federal marketplace is probably too many. And I think there's some reasoning behind why there's so many, and that it's not just one reason that we can set point our finger to and say, well, we can solve it by looking at that one reason. There are a number of things out there that are driving that behavior. And it goes to clarity in education about what we can do for streamlining, what IDIQ contracting is all about to help in the streamlining of the acquisition process. If we go all the way back into the early 90s when the GWAC contracting and came about to streamline the acquisition of IT services. And most people don't even understand the fact that GWACs are always IT contracts.
Right. The people mix the language. Yeah.
And through the Clinger-Cohen Act and the implementation of GWAC contracting and getting OMB executive agency status to run a GWAC contract is really limited. So people throw GWACs and IDIQs all into the same pool, even though a GWAC is an IDIQ. And then often we'll even turn and say there's too many GWACs. Well, the truth is there aren't that many GWACs.
No, it's like out there.
There's four or five out there. Yeah. Small business contracts, small business set-aside contracts and large business contracts. And there's only a couple of, so we only really have three agencies that are have OMB's executive agency status, being GSA, NIH, and NASA to run a GWAC contract. So those all have been consolidated down. Let's pull that out of this conversation a little bit. I don't know that there's a super proliferation of GWAC contracts, but they're certainly on the IDIQ side where agency-specific IDIQ contracts are still, they're being let every day for a new one, it seems like. Last year, there was probably a dozen IDIQ contracts.
So let me stop you right there then. Okay, so when you think about the... You mentioned the IT GWAC, so let's just focus on that for a minute. And, you know, NASA, NIH, GSA, so you have those, and you also have Schedule IT 70 at GSA. Aren't those really, those are government-wide contract vehicles, those are a shared services model that we, you know, of the type we were talking about earlier in the show. You know, and OMB has sort of directed to use pre-existing contracts, and they specifically call out schedules and IT GWACs that agencies should look to those first. Is that, you know, and we hadn't heard that for a while. So is that a growing sort of recognition that, hey, we can better leverage our acquisition resources, or do you think it's, you know, just the flavor of the day? What do you think, it's a long-term thing?
Oh, I think it certainly is a long-term thing, and perhaps there's some out there wanting to even consolidate that down even further. We can't let the pendulum swing too far in either direction. So one of the things that we found from history that we need a good, healthy competition in the available
types of contracts
and in the availability of agencies to run those contracts so that we keep customer service at the forefront in delivering those services. And yes, it is a shared service. So it's a shared service in an acquisition sense and a contract vehicle that has already been competed out so that work can get placed onto those contracts. And the intent was so that you didn't have to redo a lot of the work that it took to identify those contract holders. You didn't have to go looking for as much past performance or capability. You could then focus on the requirements and make sure that you can have your requirements met with a suitable solution.
In a streamlined task order competition.
In a streamlined task order competition.
Not par, amongst par 15.
Exactly. Not par far. It works under a different part of the FAR. And it allows for the streamlining. But, you know, even though we have the ability to streamline the acquisition on the IDIQ contracts, we don't take advantage of it. We still do every task order is a full and open competition, but only in now a limited pool of contract holders on that contract, which doesn't take advantage of the streamlining capabilities. And often that's not the ordering contracting officer's fault. It's oversight when going back and saying you issued this task order, but yet you didn't ask for past performance, and so therefore you didn't follow it right. And we don't have the wherewithal to stand up to that oversight and say, no, I'm allowed to do this in accordance to this part of the FAR and in accordance to the streamlining that's available to me under the
IDIQ. That's really a training issue, right?
This is
really and a leadership issue that you've got to use the tools the way they were intended, the way they're provided for you to do. It's consistent with the law to have a streamline. You don't need, you know, to go through all the processes identified in Part 15 of the FAR. You know, it is designed to be a quick, and even when they apply those, it's still a quicker process than going full and open competition. You know, we've seen that in the numbers. So and actually, you know what? We're already up on the break. Jimmy, you're going to have to fix that because we're not up on the break. I miscounted, so we'll keep going. I'm at about minute 36, so you're going to have to cut a little bit of that. Is part of the responsibility there for example, the GWAC holders, and I know they do a pretty good job, but emphasizing even more training on the effective use of those vehicles or, you know, some of them have delegations of authority and you have to go through a process to be able to order, like an educational process. Is it doing more of that stuff or just amplifying guidance as well?
Well, Roger, probably the answer there is both. It certainly is an education issue. It surprises me still to this day that so many people who work in the federal government's environment, who work in this marketplace that serve federal agencies, both on the contracting side of the industrial base, doesn't understand that approach in some sense, and folks on the government side and never even heard of GWAC contracts, who have never even heard of the streamlined capabilities and are still working under FAR Part 15 guidelines and are still working under the auspices of what they have been used to in a very narrow focus on doing their acquisition. Again, this does play to a place where it's a prime opportunity for acquisition and acquisition support to be a shared service in the federal marketplace.
So part of that's marketing. I mean, education, that's a dirty word, the market, you know, GSA and marketing. They don't like to use that term, but really where you're talking about getting the word out about these contract vehicles. I know exactly what you're talking about. People don't understand, you know, the capabilities and the streamlining capabilities of a lot of these contract vehicles at the task order level.
Well, it certainly is a marketing issue, and all three of the agencies who run GWAC contracts over the last 10 years have really stepped up their presence in marketing those contracts and marketing the capabilities out to the marketplace. And they have gotten significant buy-in from major parts of the federal government, defense, and most of the armed forces branches have named the major GWACs as strategic sourcing vehicles in that. But it's getting that high-level idea down into the working and operational segments of the acquisition support workforce that's in there to understand that. And so GSA has been out marketing for quite some time now, the Alliant GWAC and also the OASIS multi-agency contract and all the servicing pools for professional service it has. It's been marketing for some time, the schedules and the schedules program, and even the newest advent of consolidating the schedules and what that really means. So they've been out marketing and pushing that. NIH and the NITAC program has been out marketing and promoting their GWAC contracts for large and small business and commodity, their commodities contract for the CSP3 and the CSP3 small business and CSP3 CIOCS contracts. And NASA's been out marketing SUP for some time. Actually, NASA more recently got a lot of recognition for the SUP contract and all of the buying power that they've been able to leverage across the federal government. So there's been inroads and some success there, but oddly enough, still down at the working level, there's still an absence of knowledge there.
Right. It's one of those things you got to keep talking about it and talking about it, right? That's, you know, and raising those issues. It's interesting, you know, and it would seem to me, though, too, from a sort of shared services model, the fact that OMB has blessed these contracts with executive agent designations would seem to me that they should be easier to use by customer agencies and not have to go through, you know, all kinds of paperwork to try to justify going outside their agency to use one of those vehicles. It seems to me that ought to be some directive to that effect. Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I agree that there probably should be some kind of directive to that. But right now, the current environment forces the exact opposite. We have to have a best procurement approach,
right,
in defense. Even though they've named the GWACs as strategic sourcing vehicles, you still have to have a waiver and a best acquisition approach determination in order to use an outside of the agency contract. You have to have the interagency agreements, right, in place with other agencies and civilian agencies. So there are still barriers to taking advantage of the streamlining, right, and the GWAC contracts, which I also think adds to the proliferation. So beans, I have to go through a significant amount
me to
work.
Create my own contract and use somebody else's. It's counterproductive, because if you're given a designation by OMB, that's a good housekeeping seal of approval. People should be able to eat. The whole point is for people to use them. Why you make it harder for them to use them? And we can talk more about that after the break, Mike. We're hard up on the break. My guest today is Mike Pullen. He's Director of Strategic Operations at CGI, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Mike Pullen. He is Director of Strategic Operations at CGI Federal, and we've been talking about shared services, digital transformation, streamlining contracting, managing proliferation of IDIQs, and now let's talk a bit about standardizing as much as practical across agencies. Now, Mike, when we ended the last segment, we were in violent agreement that it should be easier to use pre-existing contract vehicles like the ITGWACs or schedules because they are a shared services model and they do have some blessing at least. So, you know, just part of the way getting there, you know, standardization. I know that's one of the trends or areas you wanted to talk about today. Talk a little bit about that.
Certainly, standardization is going to play a vital role in a lot of aspects of what we've already talked about today. When we go to approach shared services, we need to make sure that we have the understanding of how we will store data, how we will manage that data, how we will display that information to a variety of different agencies, which we already know have some differing requirements in what they need to do within their agencies and what they're trying to approach. And it doesn't matter the shared service we're talking about, whether it's one of the back office ones like financial management or human resources or IT, or if it's something else that's mission aligned, we still have to have some way to make sure we can communicate that properly and keep those things moving in the right directions together. I think, again, in the same manner, we should look at those things. You can almost apply the 80-20 rule here. Probably 80% of what things that are happening is the same, and only 20% of what needs to happen perhaps is different. So if we can get standardization around that 80% and figure out how we're going to handle that in a common way, you know, and you can apply it even to the acquisition processes that we follow. If we use the shared services or assisted acquisition services or an existing GWAC contract, there are some things in that acquisition approach that are always going to be the same.
They're common, yes.
And there are a few things that are going to have to be different. And in some sense, there might be some varying elements of terms and conditions that are different, but most of the acquisition approach, acquisition strategy is going to be very similar, irregardless of what we're truly buying at the end. So if we can get some standards around some of these things that really help us approach it. Let's just take that acquisition conversation a little bit further there for a minute. If we had RFP and proposal templates that were standardized, that we knew exactly how we were going to approach and present the data. And guess what the industrial base can do on the other side? They can be better prepared in their proposal responses, knowing that they're going to get a standard formatted RFP. Even though we have very common sections that we're all familiar with, the RFP process is so vastly different from one place to the next and one organization to the next, although it has the same information in there most of the time, just in some different varying place or order.
Right. And they require you to present it in a different way or whatever. And it's essentially the same information.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have a different approach on, say, your evaluation, and that you have a different criteria of how you're going to evaluate an award. But we only do that in a handful of different ways. And we could get to a mix and match kind of standardized environment even there that would help that approach. So if you really wanted to see some streamlining, come out with consistent requests for proposals, and then you could get consistent responses. You right there, you've taken a lot of burden off of both sides. Contrary to popular belief, proposal responses from your industrial base are not free. People have to write those. People have to put time and effort into giving you valid responses to those requirements. And all of that costs money because people cost money. So there's no such thing as a free ride.
It's a free proposal.
There's
right?
no such thing as a free proposal.
Right. It costs somebody something. Right?
It costs something. And that it still ends up costing the government something because that is a part of the overhead that organizations have in order to respond and do business in the federal marketplace.
Right. We got a couple minutes left, Mike. So, just curious, talk a little bit about, it's always interesting. I ask guests periodically, how'd you get into this crazy government contract business? And now you're at CGI, you've been at Deloitte, been to some other companies in the marketplace. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I had a really widely varied background and career, and started out actually in the telephone business, working for the local telephone company, and actually in the technology side of things towards the last half of my career there, where I managed our software development and the R&D side at a company you know as Verizon. So then after leaving Verizon, I actually ended up in still a technology role as the chief information officer for a transportation company in the area, and actually the third largest independent moving and storage company in the country, but helped them develop all of their customer relation management systems. So most of my background really was in a technology-based view. Then I moved into the consulting world after the transportation company and moving on in my career, and started consulting. And consulting in the federal side of things, where I really got involved both with the technical delivery, but more and more into the acquisitions world, and got into the program management of specific contract vehicles on the industry side, and got deeper and deeper into that over now the last 10 years of my career, where now at CGI, I have the responsibility for our entire portfolio of IDIQ contracts, and work collaboratively with government to try to help keep the dialogue going on the best approach for acquisition. So I serve in many advisory roles with NIH, working with GSA and their special interest groups, working with NIH and their industry advisory council and their community action groups to help inform those programs of how we can streamline some of these processes, working with GSA organizations such as FedSIM, helping serve on their industry advisory council for FedSIM so they can help proliferate. I actually serve as co-chair of their marketing and business development. So
I'll help them get the word out. We didn't even talk today about, maybe it's another show or talking about the FedSIM shared services model as an acquisition support for customer agencies that they provide.
Yeah, well, perhaps we can do a show later where we can talk a little bit more about that type of shared service and the acquisition support services that organizations like FedSIM and GSA's assisted acquisition services around the regions and NCR and even other organizations provide similar acquisition support such as NITAC and so forth. There's a lot there, and I've been engaged quite a bit in those conversations because I really think to get the best way for us to really come up with solutions that will truly meet the taxpayer needs is to collaborate between industry and government and keep an open dialogue of how we can improve performance, how we can improve quality, how we can improve security, and move forward in a way that helps us to think differently about the way those services get delivered into the future.
Right. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for being on the show. My guest today has been Mike Pullen. He's Director of Strategic Operations at CGI. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.